Hi everybody, it's Greg, and here's what's coming up in the Popping Collars feed for the month of July 2020. Popping Collars with me, Betsy, Liz, and Ricardo will feature a conversation about road trip pop culture, all those things that make you want to hop in the car, roll down the window, and turn up the radio. Our Going on 30 spinoff, where Betsy and I review the movies of 1989, continues this month with Field of Dreams, starring Kevin Costner and James Earl Jones. And we have two brand new shows premiering this month. The first is Take Two, where we invite a past guest of Popping Collars to come back and update their take on a piece of pop culture we discussed years ago. This month, our special guest is Eric Matoye, who will be returning to talk about The Wire. Also, later this month, past guest Shayna Watson and I will kick off a new show called The Sacred Six, where we do a six-month deep dive into various episodes of a pop culture series. The two of us will be kicking things off by discussing discrimination and diversity in six episodes of the original Star Trek television series. This month's episode will be Space Seed, featuring the origin of Khan. Thanks for listening, and keep those collars popped.
Hi there, this is the Reverend Martin Alfred from Grace Memorial Episcopal Church in beautiful Portland, Oregon, and you are listening to Popping Collars.
On the road again, just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again.
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection of religion and pop culture. I come in strong like that just for Ricardo. He loves it.
Yes!
Radio voice.
Radio voice.
I am your host. My name is Greg Knight. I am the Director of Children and Youth Ministries at the Church of Bethesda by the Sea in Palm Beach, Florida. With me are my co-hosts, Betsy Carmody. What's up?
Not much, Greg. I'm just here in Northern Virginia, where we're slowly inching towards phase three. Whatever that means.
Oh.
And it's summertime here at the Episcopal High School where I serve as head chaplain.
Liz Easton is here from Omaha, Nebraska. Liz, what's up with you?
Hey, you know, we don't have phased reentry here in Nebraska. We never had a stay-at-home order, so we've never had a leave your house order, which is not great. So I'm just kind of using my own personal discipline and discernment to figure out what phase we're in. My phasing hasn't really changed, but I'm here in Omaha where I serve as canon to the ordinary for the Diocese of Nebraska.
You're self-phasing.
That's
what
right.
I heard.
Right.
Self-effasing. Okay. I'll cut that. All right. And, and also with us is Ricardo Avila. Ricardo, welcome. What's going on?
Hi, Greg. I am rector of St. Luke's Episcopal Church in lovely Los Gatos, California, and I am currently house-sitting for a parishioner. It's part of my ministry to help watch over people's homes, especially when they are located on a mountainside and with a nice hammock. No, things are good. I don't know what California, you know, we have an identity crisis around the phase stuff. We're somewhere between phase two and three. I think it's 2A, and we might need to retreat because numbers are going up. And so happily, our diocese has been even more cautious than the state or counties that we are in. But we're doing good. We're doing all right. Oh, Greg's frozen again.
Oh,
no. Oh, hi, Greg. Are you there?
No, I'm here.
No, I'm here. I wish I could give you one of my donuts, Greg.
I don't know what to do. Like, nothing works. Nothing works.
It's your internet.
Nothing works. Nothing works. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Your internet should be strong.
One last try. Our topic today is road trip pop culture. To be honest, this was a topic that I came up with way back in January or something, because I was supposed to be walking the Camino de Santiago at this time. So it was going to be an easy topic that we could record in advance and I could set to run while I was on my adventure. I assume that you all had summer travel plans as well.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to be road tripping to Long Beach, California at this time and then flying to Wisconsin to see family.
And of course, we know Liz lives on the road. Yeah,
I do.
Normally. I am going to get to drive somewhere, so I will be on the road.
Exciting.
Nice.
Yes.
Well, here in the darkest timeline, it feels a little poignant to talk about something as trivial as road trip movies or music that we listen to in the car or books that inspire us to travel, but we're going to do it. Whatever that thing is that brings back that feeling of an open road, wind in your hair, freedom that we're all kind of missing these days, that's what we're going to be talking about. So let's go to the bag. The bag is good. The bag is wise. The bag will tell us who is kicking us off. It is Liz Easton.
Oh, the bag chose Liz.
Oh, my gosh. Well, this is kind of a tender topic for me, you know, because as you all know, my life typically is just a long series of road trips. With my ministry in Nebraska, I travel throughout our state constantly and always kind of marvel that I'm really lucky that a part of my job, at least in this season of my life, is road trips, because that's something that I've always loved. Like, that's how my family vacationed. That's how... it's just always been something that I really just enjoyed and treasured. So part of the coronavirus grieving has been not being able to do that. Anyway, I'm a little tender-hearted about this topic. So I decided to, and this maybe it's good that I'm going first because I'm going back to the one of the road trip origin stories in America, to the year of our Lord 1957. And the publication of Jack Kerouac's On the Road.
On the Road.
Oh, cliche. Cliche.
It is a cliche.
Come on.
I know. But, you know, like a lot of angsty teenagers, I first encountered Kerouac in high school. And I became a little bit of a Beat Generation scholar. And, you know, that age, teenage, early 20s, is sort of the perfect age to read this book, because you can sort of connect to the frantic, excited energy of it, but maybe are not quite as conscious of the despair and darkness of it, which if you reread it as an adult, those things are really wedded.
So in the last page of On the Road, I describe how the hero, Dean Moriarty, has come to see me all the way from the West Coast just for a day or two. We've just been back and forth across the country several times in cars, and now our adventures are over. We're still great friends, but we have to go into later phases of our lives. So there he goes, Dean Moriarty, ragged in a moth-eaten overcoat he brought specially for the freezing temperatures of the East. Walking off alone, and last I saw him, he rounded the corner of 7th Avenue, eyes on the street ahead, and bent to it again. Gone. So, in America, when the sun goes down, and I sit on the old broken-down river pier watching the long, long skies over New Jersey, and sense all that raw land that rolls in one unbelievable huge bulge over to the West Coast, and all that road going, and all the people dreaming in the immensity of it,
which I think was intentional. I think that culturally at that time in America, despair and delight were kind of married to each other. And I will say too, and because this is important, that, you know, On the Road is more than 60 years old now. And it's a problematic book. If you were to pick it up for the first time today, you'd be like, what? It is pretty misogynistic. It is pretty racist. Yeah. It has a pretty narrow worldview. But it is also a glimpse into this particular post-war America where young people were living under the shadow of the bomb and there were a ton of economic and social and cultural pressures in young people's lives that just sort of were bursting out. And the way that it bursts out in this particular book is with a series of road trips in cars and on buses all around the country. And it's a great introduction to the road trip genre, I think. It's a great introduction to Americana. It's really an autobiographical book. they were searching for something about America that is probably wasn't true then and certainly isn't true today, but it's a pretty rollicking story. It's a wild ride. This is before the interstate highway system. So road trips in America looked completely different before the interstate than they look today. And it was very small towns. It was not being able to go great distances. It was buses, a lot of buses.
I'm trying to imagine an angsty Seattle teen, Liz Easton, because I tried to read this book in my teens because I wanted to be that person who read this book because it had all this mystique on it. Couldn't do it.
I read On the Road, but not until college. Just like that tension between, you said the names, but between Neil Cassady and Jack Kerouac, the real people, was just so arousing. And I think I was like just coming out of the closet or closeted. And, you know, the way they kind of were with each other, it was romantic, was just like intoxicating.
Yeah.
And of course, Jack Kerouac and Neil Cassady were both dashing. At least,
oh my gosh, so handsome. Yes. Yeah.
Like football player, this and that. It was quite a read. I haven't reread it because I think I'm afraid it's not going to have cast the same spell.
Thanks, Liz.
You're welcome.
Nice.
Bag is identifying who has internet issues.
That's right. Get you guys out of the way first.
Exactly.
I'm going to try to power through mine before I drop out here because mine's super easy. It's the greatest American rock band. It's Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Running Down a Dream. So here's the thing about Running Down a Dream. It's pretty simple, right? It's a beautiful day. Sun beat down, had the radio up. I was driving. It's about as easy a tune as you can possibly have, but it's got that driving beat that the Heartbreakers were always really good at. You know, they came from sort of that Gulf blues guitar licks, right? So that panhandle of Florida through southern Mississippi, southern Alabama. And there's something about the way that the guitar licks in that area could really drive a song forward. And they just like hammer it on this song, like that da-na-na-na-na-na. And it just kind of propels you, right? It just keeps propelling you. And what it makes me think of is this sort of call, I think, that we have as human beings to just like keep moving, to keep moving forward, to keep going. You know, there's nothing quite as amazing to me as sort of open road in front of me. And maybe that's because I do a lot of suburban driving and a lot of urban driving. I rarely have like open road. There's something really freeing about that. Like that sense of like freedom and exploration. It's the same sort of thrill that I get when I'm on pilgrimage and I'm in a country that I've never seen before. And you're just like curious, like what's around the next turn? Like what's around the next turn? It's that kind of drive, right? What I really think it is that it's this joy of God, right? It's this idea of here is your creation. Like take care of it, explore it, you know, be good to it. And it feels like whatever that thrill is of open road, of following a trail that you don't know where it's going, that feels like the joy of God, like that dream of God of recognizing the beauty of creation. So I don't know. I feel it when I hear that song. I feel it. I feel this sort of, you know, this sort of like mission to go. And maybe we're, you know, running down a dream. It's like that sort of sense of living into God's mystery for what our lives could be.
I was thinking, about how so much of the Bible is a road trip. Like, that's a sort of reductive way to say it, but whether you think about the Israelites, you know, wandering toward the promised land or in the letters, you know, sort of this propagation of the church. But when you were talking, it really made me think of the road to Emmaus, this idea that like Christ can actually be revealed to us in something about that journey and like the liminal aspect of like not being home yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're between places, And when that happens, it does actually feel to me like it feels in my body like there's this expanse, like this openness to holiness and like this openness to meeting Jesus in that space. Yeah. So like Tom Petty all the way back to Emmaus, you know, there's a connection there, I think.
Greg, I was thinking about when you mentioned Tom Petty, I wasn't specifically thinking of Running Down a Dream, but when you were talking about the propulsive kind of, I don't know if you said drums and guitars. I thought of American Girl. Oh, yeah. All right. Take it easy, baby. Right? Dunk, dunk, dunk. Cha, dunk, 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 dunk.
Yeah.
I thought about Great Wide Open.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is, I mean, there is something about the music he produces that just you want to listen to it in the car. You want it to be in the car.
I don't know. There's something really romantic about it, I think. All right. B for Betsy. And now it doesn't matter if my internet drops.
Okay, now you're good. In the pandemic, my now 13-year-old and I have been trying to figure out, like, what shows do we want to watch together? We have consumed so many seasons of The Amazing Race. I can't even tell you. Like, Amazon Prime has most of them. The new ones, I think you have to, like, rent. Up until pretty recent. And so, like, I was a huge faithful watcher of this show. Like, she and I even watched it together when she was younger. And then once I stopped having DVR, I, like, wasn't watching it anymore. And so now it's just this ability to watch people traveling the world and watch them have adventures. It's also been so interesting to watch it with a lens of our cultural context now. So the amount of colonialism in The Amazing Race, like, here we are waiting for teams to check in on this old sugar plantation. And you're like, you know, not really talking about what helped build that sugar plantation, or the cultural appropriation that they became more sensitive to. Like, we noticed that, you know, whoever was the local who was giving them the clue, there was a season where we suddenly got all the names of the locals.
If you hail a cab in London, then rest assured, the cabbie will know your destination. To get a license, drivers have to memorize
320 routes, about 100,000 points of interest and landmarks,
through an elaborate maze of
25,000 streets, lanes, roads and alleyways that make up our metropolis.
No easy feat. This detour requires teams to memorize a cab route one turn at a time. Under the watchful eye of Dave Canal, the master of the worshipful company of Hackney Carriage Drivers.
Luis will give you your next clue, as opposed to I am a, you know, nameless brown person who is handing you this clue. Watching things that are 10, 15 years old and seeing the difference that's happening and her being able to call it out, which is fascinating. And me, you know, she's at that age where we can look at each other and be like, well, that's not right. You know, there are teams that were like, how long can they go without making an insensitive comment? Oh, not very long. And that at the time, an editor wouldn't have taken, would you know, that would never go now. Nor would, I think, some of the people on the show even say those things. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's gone, but the show just allows you this contrast of people out of, you know, competing, but then there's also these levels of appreciation of travel that also happen in the show too. So it's, and I think some of the seasons that we've enjoyed a lot are some of the all-star seasons where people have come back who haven't won and getting to watch some of your favorite. My favorite team is Jet and Cora, the Cowboys. They're my favorite team. You know, my gravy, you know, I just love it. Every moment with them is amazing. I was also reminded of, there was that Ewan McGregor and Charlie Bullock show.
God, I love that show.
Around, when they're on motorcycles. Like, they're going from the UK to New York. So it's a lot of, like, the long way. So it's a lot of Mongolia, Siberia, you know, swollen rivers. They're on the bikes. They also did Long Way Down from the UK to Cape Town. And shows like that where people are trying to pull off something that is amazing.
Has it inspired your daughter to want to travel? And to
well,
see
she
more.
Now is like, what they'll do, they'll show like a, you know, whatever it is, a detour. And she's like, she'll turn to me and she'll, which one would we pick?
Oh. I love that.
Like, oh. Or a detour. She's like, would I do this one or would you do it?
Ah.
Like, oh, I don't know. Like, I feel like in this season, I've done too many. You should probably know. But That competitive angle of it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I've never seen an episode of that show, but I know people like it. And is it true? Is it fair to say that part of the fun of it is you get a backstory on the relationships?
Yes. Yes. So there'll be, you know, mother. I love the parent-child relationships. Those always have a wrinkle of some kind in them. And watching them kind of push through whatever that personal thing is and how the race brings them closer. It was a little odd in the season where the people didn't know one another. Because normally when you get eliminated on the mat, it's like you're turning to your partner and you're like, I don't even want to run this with anybody but you, and you're the best. Like, these people didn't know each other until like a week and a half ago. And they're like, you know, well, this is really super challenging. And I'm like, okay.
There tend to be a lot of boyfriend and girlfriend teams. Yeah. And I would always call those teams the babe teams, because whenever they would communicate to each other, it would be, hand me that thing, babe. Throw me that thing, babe. Come on, babe.
You can do it, babe.
Keep up, babe.
I also watch another show, not with my child, Outlander. There's another great show with two Scotsmen traveling. It's called Men in Kilts. And it's a road trip with Sam Huhan. I don't know how you say his name. Huhan? The star of Outlander, and Ooh. Then another Scottish actor, Graham McTavish, and they're traveling around Scotland together. And I'm like, absolutely, I'd sign up for that in a heartbeat.
And they're handsome, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm into this. This is my new favorite show.
Pass the haggis, babe.
Right. Right. There was a challenge where they made haggis and had to eat it.
Oh. I love it. We have one more letter left.
One more letter.
Which one is it? There it is.
It's on a road trip across the screen. There it goes.
Very nice. Yeah, good. Thank you. My selection for the road trip episode is the now gone, basically, joy of making mixtapes and mix CDs. Mm. So just last week, I finally started taking all of my CDs. I've had my CDs in like 6-7 boxes that have traveled with me from San Francisco to Boston to Long Beach to San Mateo. Even though most of it's on my computer, I refuse to get rid of my CDs. And so finally, I'm putting the CDs into these kind of albums, right? Like photo album thingies, but with CDs, and getting rid of all the jewel cases. And so that's, you know, it's a little bit of a nostalgia trip. Oh my God, I remember I bought this CD. I used to love them and blah, blah, blah. And some of them have post-its because I would make mixed CDs for friends or mixed tapes. And I would have which tracks were the best ones and how much time they took. And I found an old list of mixes. And, you know, because you only have so much time on the side of a cassette, you know, and then you turn it to the other side. And I would sit for hours, and I loved it. And a lot of people, and probably I had like a list. My last seminary actually is what destroyed seminary and technology destroyed my CD mixes. No offense, seminary. But 2005.
I have a mixed CD. I have a mixed CD from you from seminary.
Oh, yeah.
2005 was the last one I think I made, and it was just basically like heard and liked in 2005, and people still talk to me about that. So there I was in the garage, and I was cleaning up, and I was getting all the CDs into the album sleeves and feeling nostalgic and seeing and remembering the mixes. And I thought, you know, it's just not the same to go on Spotify and make like a playlist. And I don't even know how to like share that unless you're on Spotify, but it's just not the same. It's not that painstaking process. That reminded me, since the topic is road trips, of how William and I took a road trip, I think in 2010. And we went from San Francisco to Washington, D.C. And we passed through, Salt Lake City. And then we went through Wyoming. And then we met Liz Easton in Omaha, Nebraska. And, you know, I can still remember that time we were with you, Liz. And
that was a great trip.
There's some bridge that connects like two sides of town.
Yeah, the Bob Carey Bridge. It connects Nebraska and Iowa.
There you go. And there were fireflies out.
I made you dinner.
You made us dinner, and that's where you still live, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was delicious. Anyway, I'm just going on and on. But the thing is, with William on a road trip, he just doesn't like the music I like, and he's very 19th century. So it was hard because for those hours, you know, we listened to the audiobook of Oliver Twist by Charles Dickens because that was what we were going to read in the Dickens universe. And we listened to Sherlock Holmes mysteries and tried to listen to Ovid's Metamorphosis, but it was so dull. So only when he slept could I play my rock and roll, but I had to play it low. Oh, it was like, you know, what I can't think of a classic road trip. Get your motor running, right? Get your motor running. It's just not the same. And so, but you know, it was worth it, obviously. But we had a great road trip. And I think the best thing about road trips are those moments that you can still remember decades later. It's different than traveling to like Barcelona and staying there for 8 nights because you take in the place and you can sort of lose yourself. Whereas I think on a road trip, you kind of have to be with yourself for hours on end, and you can look at things, but you can only see them somewhat superficially. So when you do stop, it means a lot. And it's very kind of, it's almost in HDTV crispness. The road trip is magical. And yeah. I didn't have a mixed tape for that trip, obviously, or a mixed CD, but a friend of ours, her name is Janet, and she, in fact, is the person who made my ordination stole. Very beautiful. I still wear it because it's red, right? And whenever clergy get together, they wear their red stoles. So I still wear it. And she moved from San Francisco to New Orleans around that time. And I made her a mix CD of kind of travel music and goodbye songs and all of that. And I've kept it for myself as well, so I know the lineup. And the first song is by a band called Sun Volt, who begat Wilco, because Jeff Tweedy was in Sun Volt. So there was a Sun Volt song that led off the playlist mixed CD that I made for Janet, and it's called Windfall. But the chorus goes, "May the wind take your troubles away.
May the wind take your troubles away.
Both feet on the floor, two hands on the wheel. May the wind take your troubles away." And then he says, "Catching an all-night station somewhere in Louisiana. It sounds like 1963, but for now it sounds like heaven." Mm-hmm. And it's just that old idea of, like, you know, even before there were mixed CDs, there was radio, and how you try to find one station to the next. And if you're lucky, mm-hmm. you get a great one that will keep you company for like 50 miles until you lose reception. And, you know, that's a metaphor for life. Maybe that's a metaphor for faith and how we're on this journey and we don't know what's going to be there to kind of accompany us and help us through. But you just have to trust that the journey is worth it. And may the wind take your troubles away. So I always think of Janet when I hear it, and I think of road trips. And so I think I have at least one or two more road trips in me. I don't know that William does, but then I can turn up the radio, you know.
I love that, Ricardo.
Love it.
That's great. I think we all can remember. There was a road trip that I took with my best friend from San Francisco back to North Carolina. It's where I discovered Tony Joe White on an AM radio station. Never heard any Tony Joe White before that. It was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Had to get to the North Carolina mountains by a specific day so that I could party with Betsy and her parents in a cabin.
Yeah, Grandfather Mountain. Oh man, that was crazy.
Those things are great. Yeah.
In the making of a great compilation tape, like breaking up is hard to do and takes ages longer than it might seem. You got to kick it off with a killer to grab attention. Then you got to take it up a notch. So then you got to cool it off a notch. There are a lot of rules. Anyway, I've started to make a tape in my head for Laura. Full of stuff she'd like. Full of stuff that would make her happy. For the first time, I can sort of see how that's done.
I believe when I fall in love with you, it won't be forever.
Thanks, guys. We did it. We made it.
We did it.
We made it without any more technology issues.
Good job.
Let's see if I can get through this outro without dropping out
here. Needing to call AAA.
Yeah, exactly. you can find Popping Collars on the web at poppingcollarspodcast.com. We're on social media as well, but instead of promoting those horrible websites, let me promote something we're doing instead. We have a brand new spinoff show of our little podcast that is premiering next week called Take Two, where I check back in with a past guest of this fine pod to update us on a piece of pop culture that we discussed way back in the day. In the first episode, you'll hear Eric Metoyer return to update us on his recent takes about The Wire in the aftermath of the murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Really good and powerful stuff in that episode. And of course, you can get our podcast in whatever podcatcher you use. You're going to be doing yourself a favor if you subscribe, because then you'll have our show waiting for you when you log on to listen to your podcast, rather than having to hunt us down every time. Finally, you can find our show and lots of wonderful Episcopal podcasts on EpiscopalCafe.com. We love EpiscopalCafe.com. We know you will as well. Check them out for all your Episcopal news needs and beyond. And with that, that is Popping Collars for this time. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Ricardo. We'll see you next time. And
keep those collars popped.
Pop, pop.
Made it.
Yay.
Yay.
Good the longest running Episcopal podcast.
That's right.
Yeah, you should have said the longest running.
Got you.